Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. This is going to annoy you. Richie and the Cats are in Lanzarote. Cats is known, or Lanzarote is known for cats, isn't it? And he says, listen to your show in Lanzarote today. Can you play a U2 song, Beautiful Day, for all our neighbours here sitting at the pool? It's only 22 degrees, he says. Go on, Richie.
The heart is blue. It shoots up through the stony ground, but there's no room. No space to rent in this town. You thought you'd found a friend. Take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful day
in Lanzarote with the Cats. Yeah. 37 seconds. That's a taster of what's to come on St. Patrick's Day when they release an album of reimagined U2 songs. Yeah, Lanzarote, there's a lot of feral cats out there. I don't know what the history is. Maybe, Richie, you could fill me in. But enjoy the sunshine and make sure you have the factor, whatever, 30 or 50 on. Of course, it's not like that here at all, but there are celebrations and it is a beautiful day in Tipperary. Daryl McCormack is from Tipperary, and you'll know Daryl from Bad Sisters, if you're a fan of that. And he also starred alongside Emma Thompson in last year's comedy drama Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. And he's been nominated for a BAFTA, which is brilliant. He's nominated in the Rising Star category. So well done to him. And he's great in Bad Sisters. And so that's one Tipperary man. Good news today. And the other thing is, you would have heard it over the weekend that the two lads from Tipperary Town, Shane O'Connor and Liam Carew, were the winner of the BT Young Scientists and Technology Exhibition. Well, there was a huge homecoming. I don't know if you've seen the videos yet, but it's brilliant. They got some local man with an open-top car. Is that what you call it? As opposed to an open-top bus. And the two lads stood in the back and waved as they were congratulated and cheered home for their win in the BT Young Scientists and Technology Exhibition. We need more of that sort of stuff in January to cheer us up. And lovely comments were posted under the video and everybody celebrating with them. So well done. And a lovely video as well of Garda Murphy. Garda Murphy up in Donegal, and of course Donegal and Cork and some other places got snow over the last couple of days, so hasn't been good up there. So what do you do? Well, Garda Murphy took the safety of the locals into his own hands. He went off, borrowed a shovel, commandeered a local farmer. Can't you do that? They can just stop a tractor in the middle of the road and go, I'm commandeering this vehicle. So he did that. He got a trailer load of grit and off he went, gritting the roads up around Donegal, up in Buncrana in particular. So Garda Murphy, well done. It's love to celebrate. It's great to celebrate things like that. If you're in the Dublin area, you could be sitting on €250,000. The National Lottery are saying that somebody bought a ticket back in Ringsend, the Maxwell service station in Ringsend Road, on November the 14th. They have 90 days to claim their prize. So it runs out on Monday, February 20th. So you still have another 4 weeks or so to claim it. But it's €250,000. That's nice, isn't it? Nice, nice, nice. The winning numbers, if you remember your numbers, were 1, 2, 8, 18, 31, 36. So €250,000 waiting to be collected there. There's great stories from all over the world about lottery wins and not wins. Back in 2021, one unlucky UK couple claimed to have missed out on €182 million in the Euro Millions after their card payment didn't go through. They've been playing the same numbers for 5 weeks in a row. And then you can imagine how they felt when they saw the digits coming up and then the disappointment to find out that their credit card payment didn't go through, so they didn't win. In 2015, there's a happier story. Staten Island plumber Anthony Perosi left the winning lottery ticket stashed behind a basement pipe for 6 weeks before realising he had won $136 million. He'd all but forgotten about it until the word spread that an unclaimed winning ticket had been traced back to the same store where he had bought his lottery ticket. So it's not exactly 136 million, but it is a quarter of a million waiting to be collected. Maxall Service Station, Ringsend Road, November 14th. If you were there and you bought a lottery ticket, that money could be yours. It could be you. This is a sign of the times. More and more vouchers are coming up for sale on sites like Dundeal. So people got vouchers for Christmas, which is nice and mostly an appreciated gift. And now they're trying to turn those vouchers into cash. And they're selling them at less than face value. And as I say, it is a sign of the times. So examples, according to an article in the Irish Examiner today, 150 voucher for a Midlands hotel, you can buy it for 100 euro. 100 voucher for Tommy Hilfiger is on sale for 90 euro. One for all worth 90 is selling for 80. A Donegal hotel voucher worth 300 selling for 250. So there are bargains to be got there. And I see a Golden Discs gift card valued at 190 is being sold for 170, 70 euro less. And they're all listed as, you know, unwanted gifts. Anyway, Dermot Jewell of the Consumers Association of Ireland said the practice of selling unused vouchers has taken off in recent months because of the cost of living crisis. He urged consumers to proceed with caution, warning of risks associated with purchasing such vouchers. This is a new thing that seems to have really taken off, he says. It's not strictly illegal, but you need to be 100% certain of who you're dealing with and that it's completely valid. The key thing to remember here is that in this situation, the buyer has absolutely no rights. Remember that. If something goes wrong, there are no laws underpinning it. That's why you have to be so careful. So buyer beware. Buyer beware. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Bono will get a mention again in the programme, actually, because there was a painting of him and his wife, Ali, that went missing and has been found, and we'll find out all about that. And of course, we have our quiz. I'll tell you about that as well. And we've a lovely young man for you to meet, Brendan Lawler. And Brendan is a disability golfer, and he's making a name for himself in the golf world. And he's come down from Louth to have a chat with us today, and we're going to be talking to him. And because of the reaction we got to Miley Cyrus's new song, Flowers, and revenge songs, we're going to be doing that after 4 o'clock, because there's a whole litany of them. From Carly Simon to Fleetwood Mac to ABBA and loads in between as well. So we'll be doing that after 4 o'clock. But first, believe it or not, this song is 20 years old this year. Released in 2003, The Thrills and One Horse Town. Where are they now? Where are The Thrills now? They had a couple of big hits, didn't they? Big Sur and that one, and the success in America and the UK and, of course, Ireland. Mark the Trucker has been on. How come Dempsey got to interview your lovely wife about her new podcast? Hey. I suppose the hay is, and you didn't. Yeah, Jenny and Mairead, Jenny, my wife, and Mairead Ronan have a new podcast. So they were on with Ian Dempsey on Today FM this morning talking about it. It'd be very weird. It'd be very weird. I don't know if it'd be allowed, but for me, it'd be very weird to interview my wife. I can chat to her, yeah, ad nauseum, but actually bringing her into a studio and asking her questions, that'd be very strange, Trucker Mark. But thanks for the text. Now, we've a new quiz this week. It's all about human endeavour. And we were thinking of calling it the Human Endeavour Quiz, but we've thrown caution to the wind and grammar out the window. And we're calling it the Who Done It Quiz. Yep, the Who Done It Quiz. We're looking for two of you to come on and answer three Who Done It questions on music, sport, books, politics, inventions, actually anything that involves human endeavour. So like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two. That's 2 points if you opt for the more difficult option and don't take a clue. However, if you opt for a clue, it's easier and you get 1 point for a correct answer. And we have a prize. Yes, we do. It's a two-night stay for two people in the Kingsley in Cork. So beautiful bedrooms, bistro-style restaurant, luxury spa and extensive health club. Kingsley has everything you need for your first getaway of 2023, set in a stylish and distinctive riverside location on the banks of the River Lee. Great base to explore Cork City and County. You can visit Blarney Castle, Rumley's Open Farm, or hop in the car for a short drive to the coastal towns of Kinsale and Crosshaven. Loads to do. Thekingsley.ie. Here is your qualifying question on this Wednesday afternoon. Foo Fighters frontman has been spotted in Dublin. Is his name Dave Grohl or Dave Troll? So Foo Fighters lead singer, frontman has been spotted in Dublin. Is his name Dave Grohl or Dave Troll? 0818715925. 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, so we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and play our whodunit quiz. 0818715925. That's 0818715925. Foo Fighters frontman has been spotted in Dublin. Is his name Dave Grohl or Dave Troll? Now, the song goes, still haven't found what I'm looking for, but for art gallery owner Frank O'Dea, he has. What was he looking for? Well, he was looking for a stolen portrait of Bono and his wife, Ali. And Frank is on the line now. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you?
Good. Happy birthday as well.
Ah, thanks very much. Yeah, I know. I just took the day off work. I said I'm going to take a day off work to celebrate the birthday.
Yeah, that's a nice thing to do, isn't it? To be able to do that.
It is.
So you're the owner of that gorgeous gallery people might know from in the Westbury Mall. It's called Balaban.
That's right.
This painting went missing when?
Yeah, no, it actually was stolen from the gallery in November 2019.
Right.
And it was recovered just last week. I actually spotted it for sale on the internet on one of these market online websites. And, so 3 years later it turns up and I was absolutely thrilled, delighted to spot it there. And I got in touch with the seller and explained the whole situation to the seller through the website. And he was totally happy to give it back to me.
Okay, the line is a little bit... Whatever you're doing there is fine, whatever way you adjusted it there. So tell us about the picture first and then we'll get the full story. So it's Bono and his wife.
It's a portrait of Bono and his wife, Ali, by the artist Tom Byrne, a very well-known artist based down in Greystones. And, it's kind of an impressionistic style painting. Probably Francis Bacon-ish kind of style to it. Beautiful painting. And that's the actual painting itself.
You sort of put it outside the gallery because it's a conversation starter and it's an eye-catcher of a painting, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and I have a lot of art outside the gallery because I like people just, to have a browse around outside rather than having to come into the gallery as well. So I do that with a lot of the art, and it just, sometimes people might feel a little bit intimidated walking into an art gallery, so I like to have things outside as well. And, mostly it's secure, so very, very rarely does something get nicked, but just unfortunately this was one that did.
Yeah. What are the dimensions of the painting about, Frank?
Well, it's big enough now. You're talking about, it's about like 2.5-3 feet by 2 feet.
It's sizable. You wouldn't fit it in your pocket. Yeah. You wouldn't fit it in your pocket.
No. No, and that's why I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm surprised that something that big, would end up getting nicked. Yeah. I've had little things in the past get nicked, but they're tiny little things like A4 size, but this was a big piece, all right.
Yeah, and it's just 1 minute it was there and the next minute it was gone.
Yeah, no, I was inside the gallery dealing with a client at the time, so I had gone out and looked and I just thought, oh no, somebody's gone off with it, and literally in the space of about 20 minutes or 25 minutes it had been taken, so there was an opportunist or somebody must have just come along at the right time. And so, I was pretty disappointed and pretty gutted, with it going. And, it was great. I'm absolutely thrilled to get it back now, I have to say.
So where has it been? Well, you obviously don't know, but what are your thoughts on it? Because it arrived on one of those websites, stuff. You spotted it there. Go on.
My understanding is that when I contacted the seller, I asked him where did he get it, and he said he bought it on another online website, a market website, a different one than the one he was selling it on. And he had it hanging in the house, and he just had it there for a couple of years hanging, and he just said to me, his wife was sick of looking at it, and he said, time to sell it on.
Yeah.
Preferred rent,
What are the legals around that, Frank? because he has something that was robbed from you. He's an innocent party in it, in that he didn't know it was stolen.
Yeah. So I mean, he was happy to give it back. You know, we as far as the legal side, I'm not sure what happens there, but he has basically given it back, not being aware that it was stolen, and he was totally surprised when I told him that it had been stolen from the gallery and all that. So from that end, you know, I requested him, I said, listen, could you drop it into the Garda station, you know, his local Garda station or around that area. And he did that, and then I got in touch with my liaison officer in Philipsburg Garda station, and they got in touch with me then. So that's how it all happened.
So he's out of pocket, that man.
He's out of pocket. Yeah, I know. It is. I understood. I've actually been in touch with him. Listen, if you drop into the gallery, you know, I'd like to give you a little gift or something. You know, something else that maybe his wife does like. but I decided that now that I got the painting back, I wanted to donate the entire proceeds to the Simon community, because I know Bono is a big supporter of the Dublin Simon community, and particularly the busk at Christmas.
That's a nice thing to do.
Just thought I'd you know, nobody's making anything financially out of it, except for the Dublin Simon.
And how much would it go for?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm hoping to get about 700-800 euro for it, but I do have a reserve on it for about 450-500. So I mean, the more you can get for the Simon community, the better. So you know, any offers over 450 would be great.
So people can find you, it's the Balaban Gallery in the West River. I'm interested to know, you were saying that others have been robbed over the years, but not many. What else was robbed?
I had a Conor McGregor one stolen a few years back, and unfortunately that one never materialised. It's ghastly. You know, you could have a painting, not that I do, but you could have a painting worth €5,000 outside your gallery, and then you could have a little funny caricature print for €20 of Conor McGregor, and that's what they'll take, €20 print, you know. I got to be careful, but I'm definitely going to keep Bono and Ali safe, you know. I don't want anyone running off with them again.
Great. And listen, I believe your wife is cooking you, is it Zopf bread?
That's right. My wife cooks me a lovely, she's from Switzerland, and they have this beautiful bread that they make there. It's kind of a buttermilk bread called Zopf, Z-O-P-F.
Right.
So she had made me a delicious breakfast this morning.
Nice.
Treated me for the birthday. So she spoiled me.
Okay, Frank, enjoy the rest of your birthday. Thanks for sharing the story with us, and thanks to Ken Sweeney, who had that story originally in The Sun this morning. Thanks, Frank. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Brendan Lawler joins us in studio. Brendan is a disability golfer from Louth. Good afternoon, Brendan.
Thanks for having me on, Ray.
Great to have you. You're just back from Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, it was a fantastic place to go to get some heat during this time of the year. Especially when you're in Ireland, you're looking out your window and it's wind, rain, even snow this morning. So it was nice to get a week there.
And it's the G4D Tour.
Yeah.
What's that?
So the G4D Tour started last year. It's a disability tour that runs alongside the European Tour that the best 10 disability golfers in the world play about 10 weeks a year, every year, and then hopefully it's going to grow to give disability golfers an avenue to try and put themselves out there, to get sponsorships and to create opportunities and get more people into the game.
And you were the first disability golfer to play on the European Tour.
Yeah, so that was a special
moment.
When
did that happen?
That happened in 2020, when the chaos was going on. I won a few events in 2019 on the disability tour, and the European Tour extended an invite out, and we made history as the first player with a disability to play against your Shane Lowrys, your Rory McIlroys, and it was a groundbreaking event.
Wow, congratulations on that.
It was amazing.
So what is your disability?
So I have a condition called Ellis Van Creveld syndrome. So it's a shorter limbs and shorter stature. So when I was born, I had a hole in my heart as well, so I had to get a VSD repair at like 6 weeks old. and born with six fingers. So there was a lot of complications, a lot of operations till I was maybe 14 or 15. And then when I got everything right, that's when I could sort of see the avenues where I could go down to, whether it was work, whether it was sport. So yeah, anything I'd done in life happened very late. So I had to adapt pretty quick.
Okay, well, let's talk about your childhood first. We'll just tell people you're 4'11". That's
4'11",
you
yeah.
stand at 4'11".
I give myself 5 foot. But
right, okay. So you've no memory now of the six fingers, have you?
No, no. They were cut off when I was 2 years old. So Mum and Dad made that decision to get them cut off pretty early.
Right.
Yeah.
When was the first time you realised that you were different to your classmates and your friends?
Oh, to be honest, I never found myself any different. I always had like an aura and a confidence where I was comfortable in my own skin. But if I had to notice a time, it was maybe fourth or fifth class when all my friends were starting to outgrow me. When I was, say, their arms were getting longer and mine weren't, and their shoe sizes were getting bigger and mine wasn't. So primary school wasn't an issue because I already had a group of friends made.
And Louth Village is small. Did you go to school in Louth Village?
Yeah.
So I'd say it's a small country school, isn't it?
Everyone knows everyone in Louth Village. Yeah. It's a small little village that... lovely community. Everyone plays Gaelic football and you make friends through that as well. So I knew all these guys from a very early age and had that friends group. But when I went to secondary school, all my friends went to different schools. So I was thinking to myself, this could be a bit of hardship going into the big bad world of secondary schools, bullies or whatever. But again, I was confident. I went in, made a joke about my height that everyone laughed at and everyone gravitated towards me, that I was a normal guy with a good humour, and it made 6 years of life easy where it could have been hell.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah. It's like out of a movie because it's very disarming. Humour is brilliant. And you then own it.
100%.
Yeah.
And then people love you because you're yourself. You're not trying to act any different to make them like you. You're just you.
And I'm interested about, because it was a big school, wasn't it? A big secondary school.
Yeah, I went to the Dundalk Grammar School I went to.
Right, what are we talking? How many?
Probably 1,000 pupils.
Okay. Did you, because you were 12, 13 at that stage, right? Yeah. Did you come up with a strategy in your head or did it happen naturally?
I think it happened naturally.
Yeah.
I had such a great support system at home, my mum and dad and my brother Liam. He was busting me when I was 10, 11 years old, and he also introduced me to his friends groups that I could be myself. I could play football. I always, anything I put my head to, I took part in every activity.
Yeah.
And Mum and Dad let me adapt to the world instead of the world adapting to me, which was incredible.
Yeah. Because particularly for men, height, you know, it can be a thing, can't it?
100%.
Yeah.
I was offered the limb lengthening and all this stuff. Like when I was 13, I went to Crumlin Hospital and they're like, does he want limb lengthening done? I was like, fuck that. I'm not going through 6 months of pain to maybe gain 1 or 2 inches.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable in my own skin. I adapted to any situation that could have been hard for me. So.
And were you in Crumlin a lot as a child?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. So I had knocked knee when I was young, so I had a lot of operations to bring my feet back to normal. So there was, I was up there every second week, so I didn't miss a lot of school. I wasn't in school much.
Yeah. The other thing, of course, is that then you're surrounded by adults a lot.
Yeah.
Doctors, nurses.
Big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that helps.
That shows, doesn't it? You can see it in your personality now even.
Yeah, yeah. It makes you mature a wee bit quicker.
Yeah.
Because I think people have a perception with someone with a disability, they're not mentally functioning the same as someone without a disability, which were just normal people with a little bit of an issue at the end of the day. But who doesn't have issues in the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you managed to get through secondary school, although the academics weren't...
I wasn't the brightest bulb in the room, but and as I said, like, Dad was very good when I was doing my Leaving Cert. He sort of sat down every evening to get me through study, and I had to be forced to do it, but I did it. I done pretty well in my Leaving Cert, failed every exam from first to fifth year, but suddenly my Leaving Cert was pretty good, so people thought I cheated all the way through, but no, it was
no, it means that when you turn your mind to it, you can do it.
I had to do well on my Leaving Cert, I was going to drop out of school after third year because I had no interest, but Mum and Dad's like, you're not dropping out of school, you have to do it.
So where did the golf, was there pitch and putt first?
Yeah, so I played pitch and putt since I was 4 years old. It was a game my granddad got me into where it's 18 par 3s where 70 metres is the longest hole.
Now, I read somewhere that somebody's back garden was a pitch and putt course.
Yeah, my granddad.
Right.
So he had three sort of 50-metre holes where I'd go down there during the summer and practice for hours. And then I joined a local pitch and putt club when I was about 7 years old called Chatham Rock. Unfortunately, it's not there anymore. It's a field now with loads of cows in it. But yeah, I got an addiction to try and getting better. Yeah. When I was 10, I was getting under 16 teams. And again, sport gave me that confidence. Like I was playing with guys older than me. I was beating guys that were 2-3 foot taller than me. And if you could do that, you felt like you could do anything.
Yeah. You have a special relationship with your grandfather.
Yeah, big time.
Billy or Bill? Bill.
Bill is your grandfather.
Your daddy is Billy, yeah. And your grandfather's Bill, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, no, it's my granddad, he was very sick about 14 years ago. I think he had some sort of, I don't know what it was, but he was on death's door. And we all went up to the hospital to say our goodbyes, and thankfully he pulled through it. And then the next few years, fantastic. He's 86 now, and he said with all this golf that's going on, it's added 10 years to his life. That he joined Facebook 3 years ago, and he's commenting and everything. Sometimes it's not a good thing, but it's fantastic. Just yeah. he has such a passion for it.
So, and then Billy's your dad.
Yeah.
And he caddies for you sometimes as well.
Yeah, dad has been fantastic. Like the early stages when the disability golf came, it was obviously a lot of funding. And dad helped me out 100% with that. He got me on the road to make my name where it was, that hopefully endorsements would come and support me. And yeah, me and dad travel the world and go to every event, and you need company, and it's yeah. If I could spend it with anyone, it's him.
Now, the amateur golfing world, so you were you performing at the unequal?
So I joined golf when I was 16.
Right.
It was never an ambition to turn professional. It was never an ambition to play against Rory McIlroy. It was just pure love of the game and a pure addiction to try and get him better. So I joined RD Golf Club when I was 16 and played there for 5-6 years. And my development in golf when I was 20, I was off scratch. So I got good pretty quick. And I started playing in the local teams and was winning matches for my local teams. But in my head, this is as far as it's going to get. Right. Because I'm not on the same level as Shane Lowry or Rory McIlroy. But I'm a good amateur player. So my Auntie Anne was surfing the web one day and she found disability golf. And she approached my mum, and mum was like, will we tell Brendan about disability golf? And mum was saying, I don't really want to categorise him now. We never categorised him in his whole life, and he's lived a pretty normal life. He's comfortable in his own skin. He's 21 now. Will he put him back a few years by saying this? And dad was like, he's mentally strong enough not to do that, so you should say it to him. So mum said it to me, and I said, yeah, I was always open to trying new things or for the development of me. So I went to my first event in 2019. I'm skipping years here, yeah. But me and dad, we played in Portugal in 2019, and there was guys there with one leg, one arm, cerebral palsy, shoulder and stature, and I'm going here licking my lips saying, this is going to be handy. People with one leg, what can they do? A completely wrong perception.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I came fourth in that event, and it was a complete eye-opener and an inspiration to see how good these guys were that went through trauma, went through disabilities. And I learned so much from it. I came back and sat down, and I wondered to myself, this is a niche in the market that's not exploited. And also, I know what level I can get my game to that I can compete against these guys, because I knew the best people were at that event. Mm. So next event, I went with a completely different attitude to Portugal. I won by 6 shots. The event after that, I went to Scotland, won by 4 shots. And the event after that, I went to, I think it was Spain, and won by 6 shots.
Right, okay. So now people are beginning to notice Brendan yeah. Lawler from Loud Village.
Yeah, with the accent, the Irishman. But yeah. It was just a love for the game.
And there was a moment in 2016, I know we're jumping around here, in Portrush.
Yeah.
That's Rory McIlroy's home place, is it? Or no, he's Hollywood, is he?
Yeah, he's Graham McDowell's home place.
Graham McDowell, sorry.
Yeah, it was that the Portrush.
Is it Portrush? No, yeah, I had that written down there. I thought there was something there. I read it in an article. Was there one where you came up to the tee alongside everybody else?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
where,
yeah.
Where was that?
That was in the north of Ireland, in Portrush. You're yes, right, there you you're go, right. Yeah. You're not wrong, you're not wrong. But
That was a moment, was it?
It was an incredible moment. Yeah. It was the north of Ireland. These are big amateur events.
The club is called the North of Ireland, isn't it? Right.
No, it's Portrush, but the event's called the North of Ireland.
Okay, right, okay.
So we played, I entered that event, and with my handicap at the time, I was like sixth on the reserve list.
And what, that means that you may play or you may not play, is that
it? Yes, we need six people to drop out.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
So we have to be very lucky.
Yeah.
So I was there at 7 o'clock that morning. And the groups are coming. It was 11 o'clock and I was third in the reserve list. 12 o'clock. Last group was 3 o'clock. So the last group came and I was number one in the reserve list. And Robert McIntyre from America never showed up. And he was in Ireland.
Right.
He was from America. He's like, is Brendan Lawler here to take a spot? I was like, yeah. Ran, got the clubs, legged it to the first tee. And my cousin teed off just in front of me. Sorry, he was teeing off just after me, and I stepped up in the tee, and people had the perception, oh, look at this guy, look at this guy, he's only 4'11", he's not going to do anything. And my cousin turned around and said, just watch. So I ripped it down the middle for the first hole, and they were like, holy crap. So it works both ways, and I played against them guys, and especially in match play, they could have a perception that they're going to hammer me. And then it could be.
But of course, you were in the perception you were going to hammer those guys the first time you went to Portugal. You know
exactly, yeah.
And that's there's a big part. Psychology plays a big part in golf, doesn't it?
Big time. It's like all the guys on tour. It's between the ears that gets them the wins. Like they all have the same talent. Some might have a better talent than others. Don't get me wrong, but if you're coming down the stretch with a 1 or 2 shot lead, it's definitely in your head that you really need to think your way around.
And you've met the Rorys and the Shanes and the Tigers.
Yeah.
You've met them all, yeah.
Very lucky, yeah. I actually played a practice round with Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry in Dubai before Christmas. And I met Tiger at the JP McManus Pro-Am this year. And we went to the gala dinner and I was sitting down with him and Rory, just shooting the breeze, having the crack. And that was an incredible moment.
So what's the, because you've become a bit of a spokesperson now, Brendan.
Yeah.
So what's your hope? Do you want to be taking them on a regular basis?
See, no.
As an equal, no.
No, that's the perception people have.
Okay.
So what I've realised pretty early is I'm a disability golfer. I'm not a main professional on tour. And you need to realise that the whole way through. I can make a big impact in disability sport. But if I'm just put in the field at Rory, you get dissolved pretty quick and your name would just be missing cuts. Like, and that's just the way it is because, yes, I'm a very good golfer with a disability and I'm a very good golfer without a disability, but I'm not at the standard them guys are at.
Yeah.
But when I played my very first event, I knew where we could make a difference. I knew we could get more people into the game. I knew we could boost the impact of disability golf in Ireland and the perception people have of it.
Mm.
To think we're not good players, and people had this perception that we weren't meant to be there, but when they see it happen, it changes it pretty quick.
And what are the obstacles, the hurdles that are put in front of you? Is it size of, do you have specially made clubs?
Yes, yeah, so I signed with TaylorMade 3 years ago, which they customise my golf clubs.
Right.
So they're half an inch shorter and they're 3 degrees flat. But the obstacle wise, I think what separates the good players from the bad players is they don't let any obstacles annoy them.
Uh-huh.
So if you're one of the best players in the world, we are just going out onto that golf course. You're playing against that golf course and the players there. You're not thinking, right, I'm a bit smaller. It's pretty hard to grip this shot. We're just focusing. Like, we have the same thoughts, same feelings as the professionals. And we're focusing on the next shot and just trying to win a golf tournament.
And Niall Horan's agency spotted you.
Yeah.
So he has his sort of boutique, bespoke little golf agency, and it's making noise around the world, isn't it?
Big time, yeah. Modest
Leona,
golf.
Leona Maguire is signed up to him and other people. So you're signed up to him?
Yeah, so as you said there, we have Leona Maguire and we have Tyrrell Hatton, and Modest were saying we want to focus on all aspects of golf, and Mark McDonald works alongside Niall with doing all the deals and bringing people in. And I met up with Mark 3 years ago again, and we were meeting up for about 6 months because he said to me, if we want this to work, you really need to turn professional, because the likes of Adidas or TaylorMade, they don't really want to support amateurs. You need to be, to get the good endorsements, you need to be professional. So it was hard to put your life in a singer's hands that hasn't done much in the sport, but I haven't regretted.
He loves golf. He loves golf,
and I haven't regretted the decision once. The guys treat me fully inclusive. They get me the same deals as anyone else, and they also treat me the same as anyone else. And as a player and as a disability golfer, that's all we can ask for.
Yeah. It's nice to be with a fellow Irishman as well.
Big time, and he's such a lovely chap. Like, people might have seen the stuff he's done with Lewis Capaldi, or people really like him.
Yeah, and, oh no, he's, and when he's you, sound.
When you see
he's
him,
sound, yeah.
And when you meet him, go for a coffee with him, it's the exact same person.
Or curry chips. Same, he's a big fan of curry chips.
Yeah.
So your girlfriend is Rebecca.
Yeah.
And you've been going out forever.
A long time.
That's what they say down the country. You've been going out forever.
Eight and a half, nine years. She'll kill me not for remembering, but yeah, it's a long time. It's great.
Childhood sweethearts.
That's it. No, it's great. She's a good girl. Very supportive of what I do, and I travel a lot in my job, so for her to accept that is pretty cool.
Yeah. So the pitch and putt course is now a field with cows in it.
Yeah.
So where do you do your golfing, your training?
So 2 days a week, I'm an honorary member in Carton House. So I go up there 2 days a week, and also I'm 10 minutes from RD Golf Club.
Right.
So the guys at RD were very good to let me use the facilities whenever I want and go down and play golf. So no, I'm very lucky.
Brendan is an inspiration and a leader. Keep up the good work. That's from another Brendan. That's a one-armed golfer, that Brendan.
Very good.
Great to hear Brendan getting some exposure. Wishing him every success in 2023 from all the McGraths in Manchester. Do you know them?
No.
No. They know you, Jared. I think it's McGraths. MC Garts. Does that make sense? No.
Garts.
No. There you go. It sounds like they know you, Brendan. Well, but they
give
may
me,
not.
Give me a text.
So this year, what's the aim?
Yeah, so we've just competed in our first event in Abu Dhabi last week. I came third in that, which was not a bad start of the year. I was world number one for 8 months last year, and I got overtaken by an Englishman. So I have to get back up there.
Right.
Yeah, that's my goal for this year. Going out to win a few events to just to make an impact again. Yeah, right. We had great 2021, so going to have a great 2023.
Well, lovely to meet you, and I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Thanks very much.
Brendan Laurel, thank you.
See you later. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the voting for who will get nominated for the Oscars wrapped up yesterday. We'll find out the outcome of that next Tuesday, and the BAFTA nominations will be announced tomorrow. So it's all going on. It's nomination season. And one man who'll have no nails left by next Wednesday is the director and writer of On Colin Kuhn, Colm Bourade. How are you doing, Colm?
Hey, Ray. How are things?
Good. Seemingly there's a bit of debate over the pronunciation of your name. Colm. What is it?
I guess it's Colm, really. But my mum calls me Colm most of the time, and my dad calls me Colm, so I'm not quite sure.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, congratulations on all the success of On Colin Kuhn. Is it unbelievable in your world or expected?
Well, this is my first film, right? So I had nothing to kind of go on, you know, prior to this. So I guess unexpected, probably more than nothing else. But yeah, I mean, it's been an amazing year. It's like crazy, you know. It's essentially been a sort of adventure that I've been on with my wife, who's also the producer of the film, Fiona Nicruti. So our house has just been Team Colleen Kuhn, Team Quiet Girl for the last 12 months and more. So, it's just been amazing. Like, I'm just so grateful to, like, particularly to the audiences, you know, like all the people who came to see us in Ireland and the UK. Like, it's just been phenomenal, you know.
And it moves people. Your movie moves people.
Yeah. People tend to have a similar reaction, particularly at the end of the film. Which is exactly the reaction I had when I first read the book that the film is based on, which is Foster by Claire Keegan. So like I was in tears at the end of that, and you know I just had this very clear vision of how to, you know, adapt it to the big screen, and yeah, I felt like, you know, if we can capture like even like 70% of what Claire created in Foster in the film, then I thought we would have something that would move people, and that thankfully seems to be the case. Like, people seem to need their Kleenex at the end of the film.
And you mentioned the audiences in the UK, and there's a language barrier there. So the fact that it's cut through that is testimony to the strength of the story and the movie and the direction and the acting.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, we're very proud of the film. You know, we kind of really have always really believed in it, I guess. But it's also, there's, you know, audiences are changing as well. It's like, you look at Bong Joon-ho, who directed Parasite, and, you know, they obviously won Best Picture there a few years ago at the Oscars, and in his
Korean
speech,
movie, yeah.
Korean, and he said in his speech about, you know, if he was speaking to audiences around the world, and he said, if you can get over that one-inch barrier that is subtitles, there's a whole world of cinema waiting for you. And yeah, I do feel like their audiences are more receptive to that idea, you know, that they're willing to sort of engage with subtitle films. Like, even people watch Netflix now, and they'll be watching stuff that's even in the English language, and they'll still have subtitles
on.
Yes.
I was going to say then, it's probably because of streaming that people are more accepting of subtitles.
It's definitely helped. Yeah. I mean, you know, think about all the things like Squid Game and Dark or whatever, all these different massive TV shows that have come through the likes of Netflix and Amazon and so forth.
With subtitles.
You know, it's sort of normalized subtitles, I guess. Yeah, and people have realized that there is all this great stuff out there, you know, that just happens to be in a different language to what they're speaking every day.
Now, before we get to the nominations and all of that, so it was released, re-released, and is it a third re-release now, or is it a second re-release?
I don't know what you call it. So like we were released last year in May, and we ran it was in our cinemas for over 6 months, and then it was brought out again over Christmas by the likes of the IFI and the Lighthouse and the Stella, I think, in Rathmines. They were doing like their kind of favorite films of 2022, and our film, it happened to do really well over Christmas, like it was selling out, so it's still playing in those cinemas.
Right.
And now from this Friday, it's being opened in, I think, over 40 cinemas. All the Omniplex cinemas are bringing it back, and there's a bunch of other regional cinemas, I think, are doing it as well. So, yeah, it's mad.
Brilliant. And it's available to stream on Apple, and I see it's available to stream on IFI at home as well, which is a nice service, and people would be good to support that because it's a home service, obviously. What's your understanding now? I know this is your first experience of it. So, the voting starts as in from last night, as in the campaigning stopped. Is that it for the Oscars?
So the voting finished last night.
Oh, finished last night. Okay, right.
Yeah,
okay.
And it's only a very short voting window. So it's only 5 days that Academy members can vote. So it's all the time prior to those 5 days was all the real campaigning, you know. So we would have been over in LA 4 times, I think, in the last 2 months. And we would have been holding screenings specifically for Academy members and, you know, meeting all the members, as many as you can, and so forth. And just trying to, you know, raise the profile of the film and get people to watch it. But so basically we're on the short list, right? So that's 15 films have been selected from around the world. And 5 are going to be chosen, and that's announced next Tuesday.
Right.
Yeah, so but the thing is, like, the voters, anyone who's voting in this category, they have to watch all 15 films. So you can do all the campaigning you like, in a way. If the voter doesn't like your film, then they're not going to vote for it, you know? Mm. So it's kind of an even playing field in that regard, in that you know that they have to watch each of the 15.
And they have the option of watching it in a cinema or watching it at home, do they, on their own telly?
Yeah, so, like,
you would prefer them to watch it in the cinema, I would imagine.
Yeah, and most of the voters we've met much prefer that. They make a point of going to the screenings.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, we set up we had all these screenings set up through our distributor in the US and our publicist over there. So the whole campaign actually is really, like, we're so grateful to Screen Ireland and TG Cahir and IFTA as well. Like, we couldn't have done this whole campaign without them and our US distributor. But yeah, the voters can go and they can watch it on the big screen. and we would have been there doing Q&As and meeting them. And, you know, you have to put on a bit of a reception as well. You have to give them a bit of food afterwards and right. a glass of wine or whatever. But they can also watch it. Like, the Academy has its own version of like a Netflix. It's like a portal where they can watch all of these films, you know. Mm. But I do think most of them try and get out and get the free food. And
the cinema experience as well, yeah. So you mentioned yeah. T.G. Carr there, and then they say that this is their dream goal, to get an Irish language film to the Oscars. So you're on the long list. Next Tuesday, the five movies who are nominated for an Oscar will be announced. Where will you be when that phone call comes through, and what way does it work? Do you have to wait and just watch it the same as everybody else, or what, how does it work?
So basically it's an announcement that goes out on a live stream online. Yeah. So I think it's 5:30 a.m. LA time it starts. So that's 1:30 here, I think. We're gonna gather together as much of the kind of crew of our film as possible, and whatever happens, whether we get through or not, we're gonna like just raise a glass, and we're gonna watch it in the Stella there, I think, in Rathmines. Just we're gonna have a look at
nice.
It there.
And, so that's lunchtime next Tuesday. You'll all be gathered in the Stella in Rathmines, and they'll have the facility to stream the announcement up onto the big screen. Is that the plan?
That's the plan, yeah.
Okay, and oh my word. Oh. Yeah. My heart rate's increased already, and I've nothing to do with it whatsoever. But,
God. We're like,
whose idea was that?
I know, we were kind of thinking, oh, we just watch it at home. But then we're like, God, that'd be a bit kind of depressing if we didn't make it today. We're just sort of, all right, what do we do now? Yeah. So we kind of thought, we might as well get together and like mark the moment. So,
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. And especially because we shot it during COVID, and we didn't get to have a wrap party or anything with the crew. And yeah. So it's sort of a nice opportunity to see everyone.
Well, there's a lot to celebrate. There is a lot to celebrate. Oscar or no Oscar. There's an awful lot to celebrate, as you know. Just to wish Colin Kuhn and all involved best of luck. Went to see it on film night last week in St. John's Theatre, Listowel, and such was the demand that they put it on for a second night to a packed theatre. It is a most beautiful production. Well done to all associated with the film. West Limerick listener. There you go. So that's the Oscars, and then the BAFTAs, they're been announced tomorrow.
Yeah. So we've been long listed in three categories for that. So we're in the film, not in the English language. We're best director and best adapted screenplay.
That's
as
you.
Well.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So you're up for in the long list for two BAFTAs, so that they'll be announced tomorrow.
Three BAFTAs, right? Get it right.
Sorry, three BAFTAs. I mean you yourself, you personally.
Oh, sorry.
I suppose the movie is one, and then you, director, and you wrote it as well, as in you took Claire Keegan's book, Foster, and you adopted it for the screenplay. Listen, we'll be talking again, Colm, so I won't ask you what's next for you, because that's a big chat, and probably a lot of pressure there as well, so we won't talk about that until the next time. Good luck with the BAFTA nominations, good luck with the Oscar nominations, and I have a feeling that we'll be talking within the next 7 days at some stage. Thanks, Colm.
Thanks so much, Ray.
Bye. That's Colin Bered, director of On Colin Kuhn. And Ish Tarshin and the Priestkelton and Oakta La Marion Nihulawan. Gramaga Marion, thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. There's somebody going to see it in the Glore in Ennis. It's not called the Glore, it's just called Glore, isn't it? In Ennis. They're going to see Colin Kuhn on Colin Kuhn. And Catherine Clinch, who we spoke to, who's the girl in it, you'll see on the poster, she's amazing in it, as is my old colleague, Carrie Crowley. So we wish them all, everybody, cast, crew, good luck in the BAFTAs and the Oscars. Now, who done it quiz? We've two quizzers standing by to answer three who done it questions on sort of human endeavour things. Music, sport, books, politics, inventions, loads of things can come up. We'll explain the rules in a moment. And there is a prize. It's a two-night stay for two people in the Kingsley in Cork. The beautiful bedrooms down there, bistro-style restaurant, luxury spa, and extensive health club. It's set in a stylish and distinctive riverside location on the banks of the River Lee, and a great place to explore Cork City and County. TheKingsley.ie for more info. TheKingsley.ie for more info. Hello, Sharon Flynn.
Hello, Ray.
How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I'm good today, actually. Thank you.
Good.
Are you originally from Kildare? Whereabouts in Kildare?
North Kildare, not in your country, just between Maynooth and Kilcock.
And where'd you move to?
Not too far, down the road to Enfield, County Meath.
Aha, yeah, so just across the border. You're not, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just throw a stone, really.
Yeah, how many miles is it between your home place and where you're living now?
God, I don't know. It's just about a 15-minute drive.
Okay, right, okay.
15-20.
Yeah, so about 10 miles, maybe.
Yeah, about that, I suppose.
You're just in from work, are you?
Yeah, just in the door.
Right, what do you do?
I'm a secondary school teacher.
Have you seen On Colleen Kuhn?
Yes, I have. It's excellent.
Isn't it?
I teach Gaelic as it happens.
Yes, so. That's why I asked you in particular.
Yeah,
it'll be great. You could actually show it in the classroom, couldn't you? Because it's on a streaming.
Yeah.
It's on Apple now, yeah. And it's on that IFI at home. Yeah. It'd be a good one to show. How long are you teaching Gaelic?
12 years now.
Right, and where's your current place of employment?
The last 6 years I'm in Firhouse Community College in Dublin, 24.
How big is that now? How many pupils?
We have between 800 and 900 pupils.
Right. And how was your commute? Because you're going from there, then Firhouse out to, you don't want to talk about it, is that it?
Yeah, it depends on the day. Tuesday mornings are terrible.
Right, because you have to be in for 9, do you? Is it?
We start at 8:50.
Right, okay. But when you say Tuesday morning, is that because of your timetable or because traffic is pretty bad on Tuesday morning?
Traffic is particularly heavy, I think, no matter where someone's coming from. Tuesdays are really bad.
I wonder why that is. That's interesting, isn't it?
I think everyone works on a Tuesday. If someone's working from home, it might be a Monday or Friday, maybe.
That's probably it, yes. Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. Yeah. So your partner is Jeff, and what's for dinner this evening?
There'll be leftover chicken curry this evening, and I'll do a stew for tomorrow, so I'll put that in a slow cooker now later.
Right. I always think that the curry tastes better the second time round, doesn't it?
Yeah, they say that, all right.
Yeah, so. And you have a good bit of work to do, which is what?
Oh, I just have some marking to do for my third year students. They've their mocks coming up, so.
Right, you're suited to mark that. You're up against a mark, as it happens. Mark McNamee from Castle Bellingham in Louth. How you doing, Mark?
Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Not too bad. So you're a Tyrone man living in Louth?
Correct, yep.
For how long?
Well, I've been in Louth since 2000, since the year we got married. So, yeah, since 2000. So.
Right. And did you fall in love with a Louth woman?
No, and a lady from Tyrone as well.
Oh, yeah, right. So you just moved down. Both of you moved down to Louth, yeah.
It was a long story, but it was a wrong number. And my wife now answered the phone. I was ringing someone else about a work-related thing, and I got the wrong number. So she answered the phone, so... A long story. It's too long for the radio.
No, you have me. You have us all. So what? This is how you met your wife, by calling a wrong number.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But basically, I was to go and see a customer in Belfast, and the person gave me the number and said, their number will be in directory inquiries. When you're going up, give them a ring.
Yeah.
So I got across the border, rang the number, and the directory inquiries gave me a number. It turned out to be, it was the right surname. But and Kira, my wife, knew the customer I was looking for, and we started chatting, and I didn't know it, but one of her friends was listening on the other extension in the house,
right.
And she came off the phone and said, "I know that guy,"
right.
And I got cut off, and I rang back again, and then I said, "Do you fancy maybe meeting up sometime?" And her mate in the background was going, "Yeah." Little did I know this, of course, all of this. So,
yes.
So yeah, so this story has done the rounds around Tyrone for the last number of years.
That's the opening chapter. We still don't know why you moved to Louth, but that's for the second chapter, which we'll get to. And there's going to be yoga involved in this book as well, because that's what's on the cards for tonight.
That's Maggie, my daughter. One of my daughters and myself have been coerced into getting a bit of extra. Suppleness into ourselves,
right.
So yeah, we're going to yoga tonight. So,
you won't regret it. You won't regret it. I'm just reading a book at the moment, and yoga is brilliant for everything.
Well, I can tell you, Ray, if it had been an NCT test last Wednesday night, I would have failed, because there's that many squeaks and bumps from me when I was doing it.
And it gets easier as the weeks go on. Okay, so Mark is taking on Sharon in our Who Done It quiz. It's new, so I'll explain the rules to you. So it's all about human endeavour. So who sang this? Who wrote that? Who's talking here? That's basically it. And because it's a whodunit thing, there are clues. I will tell you the category. If you opt to go for a clue, I will give you a clue, and then I'll play a clip, and you get 1 point for a correct answer. However, if you say, I don't want a clue, Ray, and I just ask you the question and you get it right, you get 2 points. And we have a little clock at the end of each clip, so you have to give me the answer before the klaxon sounds. Does all that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah, and whoever has the most points wins, and if it's a draw in points, we go to a tiebreak question. Okay, here we go. Good luck to Sharon and to Mark.
Best of luck, Mark. Okay,
best of luck.
Now, Sharon, the first category is music. Do you want a clue or not?
I'll take the clue, please.
You'll take the clue. He was in a band whose name rhymes with Bam. Who is this?
George Michael,
yeah. There you go, you get a point for that. You're probably kicking yourself. You would have known that without the clue, would you?
Probably, yeah.
Probably, okay.
Yeah, I know, I would have, yeah.
Right.
I knew.
Mark, music. Clue or no clue?
I'll try a clue, yeah.
You'll try a clue as well, okay.
Yeah.
Her surname is Ciccone. Who is this?
Madonna.
It is Madonna, yes, it is, yes. And you get a point as well. That's Express Yourself. Okay, so an even start, one each. Well done to you both. Our second category, Sharon, is film or movies. So, do you want a clue or do you want to have a go at it?
I'll have a go this time.
Okay. Who is this actress? Here we go. Listen carefully, because there's loads of clues in what she says.
It was a most beautifully crafted movie. I mean, the details in the movie, the scenery, children, songs, music, all of it. But it means very, very many memories. Funny ones, real ones, lovely ones. And working with dear Chris Plummer also.
Oh, amazing.
Whom I adored, and we were friends for years.
Who's that?
Oh, God, I'm not sure. No.
No. Talking about The Sound of Music, it was Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews. Oh, yes, my goodness, yes. I'm kicking myself.
Yeah. The clue we would have given you is she's a dame. I don't know if that would have helped any, but no points there.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark, movies, film, do you want a clue or not?
Oh, I think I'll go for a clue.
You go for a clue. The clue is 007. Who is this?
Because they're still making them, it'll always be there. But I did it basically for myself. You know what I mean?
Sean Connery.
It is Sean Connery. Yes, it is Sean Connery.
Job, a change of position, change of seeing things, way of seeing things and doing things. Especially as an actor, I just found it became very limiting.
There you go. That's why he stopped doing James Bond. You get a point for that. So, Mark, you're on two. Sharon, you're on one, but you still have a question to go. And if you go with no clue and you get it right, you're on three. That puts Mark under a bit of pressure. You sort of have to, he's on two. If you go for a clue and get it right, then you're even with him, but he has a question in hand. So what do you want to do?
Oh, so I'm probably better chance without a clue.
Okay, it's sport is the category. I should have told you that beforehand. Sport is the category.
Okay.
And pretty straightforward. Who is this?
You know, knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad.
Is that Brian O'Driscoll?
It is Brian O'Driscoll. Well done, 2 points. There you go. We didn't even get to the klaxon. So you're on three. You can't do any more. Mark, you're on two. So if you decide to go with the sports question without a clue and get it right, you're today's winner. If you go with a clue and get it right, we're into a tiebreak situation. What do you want to do?
Oh, I better not risk it. I'll take the clue.
Oh, you'll take the clue. Okay. This tennis player has a competitive sister. Who is this?
I'm at an age where I definitely have a lot more to give, and there's a lot more that I want to do. And so there's so many things that I've been wanting to do for so many years, and I have such a passion for tennis for so long that I have never done it. But now it's time for me to, like, start to enjoy those things.
Serena Williams.
It is Serena Williams. Yes, you get a point there. So it's 3-3. I'm just checking with that. Yeah, 3-3 is 3-3. Takes us to a tiebreak question. Well done to you both. So we asked you this question before we went on air. I'm going to repeat it now for our listeners at home. And whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from Fanad Lighthouse in County Donegal to Hookhead Lighthouse in County Wexford? So your guess, Sharon.
Was way off. I think it was 36 hours, I said.
You said 36 hours, right? And Mark, you said...
I think it was 7 hours 50 or something. Yes. It was under 8 hours.
Yeah, you said 7 hours 50 minutes. It's 429.5 kilometres. And it would take you to cycle from Fanad to Hookhead 22 hours and 32 minutes. So, Sharon, you're today's winner. Sorry about that, Mark.
Okay.
Mark, lovely, lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
And keep up the yoga. You will see the benefits in loads of different ways. It's not just about the physical thing, it's the mental thing as well. So good luck with that. Thanks, Mark. Mind yourself.
You. See
Cheers.
You
now. Bye. And we're going to send Mark out a Radar Show Keep Cup. Sharon, you're today's winner, which means you are off to the Kingsley, yourself and a person of your choice.
It'd have to be Jeff, I suppose.
Yes, it would have to be Jeff. Yeah. The Kingsley.ie. Well done.
Thank you, Ray.
Lovely
Thank
talking
you so
to you,
much.
Sharon. See you now. Bye.
Thank
bye,
you.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
The Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, revenge songs, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Shakira has one. Miley Cyrus has one. They've been sharpening their pop music knives and released scathing songs about their exes. So we wanted to hear more. So Afric O'Connell from 2FM. Has revenge on her mind. How are you doing, Afric?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Now, listen, this Flowers Miley Cyrus song, has it had the same effect on you as it had on the other women in my life, like Niamh and my wife? Yeah.
Oh, it was just the most glorious celebrity week because you had Shakira doing her revenge song and then Miley came out with hers as well. So I love all the detail in this because I love a good, it's a bit like, you know, in Father Ted, like the golden cleric where he goes, now we move on to lawyers. It's like somebody having a platform to do this in real life. I love it. So this song, Flowers, it kind of mimics Bruno Mars, When I Was Your Man, which he, Liam Hemsworth, which is Miley Cyrus's ex-partner, ex-husband, dedicated that track to her at one stage during their relationship. So she has taken that, she's kind of flipped it and she's changed all the refrain and everything and the lovey-dovey stuff to, I can buy my own flowers, I can hold my own hand. They got divorced in the last 2 years, 2020, they got divorced. And in the video, her fans have suggested that she's dancing in the same suit that Liam Hemsworth wore to their wedding. So it's a tangled web, right? It really is.
I was just saying the other day, it's alleged that he was unfaithful 14 times.
14 times.
All this unfaithfulness happened in the house where the video was shot.
That seems to be the case. Yeah, okay. And it's very pointed. She also released it on his birthday.
Right.
I don't know if you knew that particular detail.
Okay. Well, let's play a bit of it. Flowers, Miley Cyrus, and I see it's top of all the streaming charts all over the world.
I can buy myself flowers, write my name in the sand, talk to myself for hours, say things you don't understand.
Sad though, isn't it?
I kind of like it. It is. Do you know what? It is sad. And it is sad to see the bare bones of a relationship and kind of a relationship breakdown laid out like that. But when someone's raging and they release a song like that, I'm like, I'm all for it. Hook it to my veins.
They're washing their dirty laundry in public.
Yeah.
That seems to be in vogue at the moment, what with Spare and all that, Harry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're getting all the information we never thought we needed to know. It's brilliant. Yeah.
And she has a hit in her hands.
Yeah, she does. Absolutely, she has a hit in her hands.
I suppose we probably wouldn't be talking about it if it wasn't a good song.
I really like it. Yeah. I think just as a pop song, I think it's really solid. Really, really like it. And that also helps because, I mean, you can release whatever, you know, tearing your shirt apart you want, but if it's not a good song, it's not going to chart. People aren't going to be interested.
Okay,
in it.
And there is a history yeah. of revenge songs. And this one is probably one of the most famous.
Yeah. Great.
You're a big head, you're a sure case. So, Carly Simon.
I love it. It's one of the most famous revenge songs of all time. And there was so much speculation for years and years and years about who it was about. You know, people speculated that it was about Warren Beatty, who Carly Simon dated in the 70s. Now, but in among all the names as well was, it could have been about Mick Jagger, could have been about James Taylor, ex-husband, it could have been about David Bowie, David Geffen, and even Cat Stevens, right? But she did, Carly Simon did speak to People magazine a couple of years ago, and she said that she confirmed that that particular verse that you've just played is actually about Warren Beatty. And she
says, well, you had me several years ago when I was still quite naive.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And she said, Warren thinks the whole thing is about him, which is
I loved that. I thought it was great.
So that is the most famous revenge song of all time, I think.
Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake. This, you would think a match made in heaven.
I tell you, the chokehold that this had on me in the early noughties was something else, right? So this was released in 2002. Justin Timberlake, Britney Spears were the dream couple because they were at the top of their game, both of them. Justin was in NSYNC. Britney was obviously Britney. She was the most amazing performer. And they were together. And it turned out he alleged that she had been unfaithful to him with her choreographer. The relationship fell apart, and Justin, on his album Justified, which was his first solo venture after NSYNC, had this track Cry Me a River on this album. And this, the track was brilliant. Track is just a very good track, in fairness, but the music video was what caused absolute ructions, because we were all watching music videos on MTV and all that kind of stuff at the time. And he used a Britney lookalike in the video to tell the story of a cheating ex-partner. It's brilliant.
Just in case there was any confusion about who he was singing about. Tell me you love me, why did you leave me all alone? And did she react to it?
Yeah, she did. She spoke to Rolling Stone. They interviewed her, and she talked about seeing the music video, and he had apparently called her up and asked if it was okay to put this video out. And she said that he had called her up supposedly to get back together or whatever, is what Britney said. And she said, and by the way, you're in a video that's coming out. That kind of got slipped in, but she said, don't worry about it, it's not a big deal. But the first she knew of it was when she saw the video and the Britney lookalike. Yeah. She knew it was a video coming, but not necessarily.
I suppose you have to get inspiration where you can.
You can't, yeah, when, you when have you're, to, you're exactly.
A creative person.
That's it.
Now, I don't know where this came from, because this is a group and they probably don't write their own stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But we're talking Little Mix, and shout out to my ex. I hope she getting better. Hope she ain't faking it like I did, babe. Took 4 long years to call it quits. Forget that, boy, I'm over it. So no subtlety in this one. Shout out to my ex.
Shout out to my ex. Yeah. That's it. Like, you just lay it out. Yeah. So this is 2016. So they released Shout Out to My Ex as the debut single from their third album, Glory Days. And there was a lot of speculation at the time around whether the lyrics were directed at Zayn Malik from One Direction, who was going out at the time, or actually dumped by text Perry Edwards from Little Mix.
Right.
And so they never, Little Mix never.
You can't
never,
be doing that.
You can't be doing
no,
that.
You no, you can't be dropping somebody don't, by text.
Let's have the decency to make a phone call, yes. At least, right? At the very least. Yeah. So Little Mix never actually confirmed whether the lyrics were about Zayn in particular, but Zayn's cousin, Sasha,
Malik, we're involved here.
Went on Twitter to say that absolutely they were, but she got a bit of backlash from that. So she had to apologise then for putting out these tweets, because we all know One Direction stans at the time were...
Oh, yes.
They're militant, is a good word. So she said, I understand that my tweets were easily misunderstood. No shade though, ever, but I won't hate a person for having a past with a relative of mine. Both have now moved on. The world would too, should too. And she said that the fact the song is about Zayn doesn't even cross my mind when I listen to it. Yeah. It's just a song.
But there's a lovely, there's a good line in it. For the hate yous, the tattoos, oh baby, I'm cool by the way. Yeah. Ain't sure I loved you anyway.
It's rough, isn't it?
Isn't it?
I know, that'd cut you deep.
Yeah, it would cut you deep. Now, it's when bands, I love these next two, because it's when bands, when relationships within bands who are still performing and writing, when they go wrong.
Yeah.
The messed up thing about this is that
so good.
The men are writing it.
Yeah.
And the girls are singing it.
The girls are singing it. Exactly. So this was 1976. This is obviously ABBA, Knowing Me, Knowing You, not just an Alan Partridge number. It was released on Valentine's Day in 1976 by Benny and Bjorn written. And also they were all in respective relationships with Agnetha and Annefrid in ABBA. And these relationships were falling apart at the time. And this was sort of the first, this was less bubblegum from ABBA, and this was the first kind of real delve into the breakdown of relationships and things that happen when you're an adult, and you know, the sadness when you realise, you know, walking through an empty house, tears in my eyes, when you realise that maybe things actually aren't going to come good this time. I know, it's terrible.
It's only recently, because we were talking about breakup songs recently, and somebody said that's the best breakup song ever, and I'd have to listen to the lyrics again.
I know.
Because I thought that was just a...
Because it's super upbeat.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, and you have all the Alan Partridge stuff surrounding it as well, of course, which is, you know, makes it even better. But it is very sad. Yeah. And The Winner Takes It All is really sad as well.
Is
you
it?
Know? Yeah, it's, that's about a breakdown relationship too.
And groups, you know, it must be very difficult because you're living in each other's ears and you fancy each other and then you don't fancy each other and you're married and you're not married, and that happened a lot with Fleetwood Mac.
You can go your own way.
So right, again, is it lyrics written by one person having to be sung by somebody else?
Exactly. So this was Lindsay Buckingham's song that Stevie Nicks obviously had to sing. So there's a comedian that says, I think it's the best, like, it's the best breakdown of Rumours ever. It is, Rumours is an album written by and for people who are cheating on each other.
Right.
Okay. So that's who it's for.
So they were a couple.
Yeah, so they broke up while they were making Rumours. So there's a lot of conflicting accounts about when they broke up, they made up, who was at fault, all this kind of stuff, until it was all too much and they finally called it quits. Go Your Own Way is kind of how Lindsay's take on the whole thing. So his take on the whole thing was that Stevie Nicks wouldn't let him love her, so to hell with her kind of thing.
Right.
But Stevie has to sing the lines. You know what I mean? So Stevie has absolutely cursed Lindsay Buckingham for the song. It includes the line, packing up and shacking up is all she wants to do. She had to sing that about herself, which is a bit harsh, in fairness.
There you go. Afric, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm putting all these on a playlist
for
now.
Talking us through revenge songs, and we are packing up and shacking up now. Well, just packing up, because we have to go. Thanks, Afric.
Thanks,
and Afric's on 2FM over the weekend. Sarah is on the way on Drive Time, and we are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.